What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another Lure Lab, a part of the Serious Angler Network. As always, I am your host, the captain, Andrew Fole, and today we have a really good episode. It's coming into the post spawn in the southern parts of the country. We're going to be talking about the grass that's growing and how to catch bass in it. So kind of take it as a finesse in the grass 101, and we have a cool guest from joining us from the northern country. He was a frequent flyer on the Serious Angler podcast episodes there for a while, and he just kind of got lost somehow. But I know he just finished up a tournament on Kentucky Lake and caught a bunch of smallmouth, and we're happy to have him coming on. It's been a minute, so I'm looking forward to chatting here and picking his brain on finessing the grass to get a bunch of summer post-spawn and summer bass in the boat. So without further ado, let's welcome Adam Bartuzak. What's up, man? How you been?
What's up, dude? Yeah, no, I was a frequent flyer, and then all of a sudden, like, I got busy. You guys got busy, and it's been like a year and a half, 2 years, and it's like, wait a second, I haven't been on in a while.
Yeah, well, you're on all the time because of fantasy fishing, and then all of our schedules were all over the place, and it's like, oh, dang, he's gone.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out a night to film it, and you guys were like, Tuesdays. I'm like, I literally fish tourney Tuesdays. That's not possible.
Yeah. I mean, it's all good.
But it's all good. No, it's been great. It's been fun to watch everything going on. And yeah, I've been fishing a bunch more tournaments now, a little bit more nationally. And yeah, it's been a good time.
Yeah, you just had, what, a top 20 at Kentucky Lake?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a blast, man. That place is a riot. I'd love to come on and chat with Bailey and you about it sometime. But like I was telling my friends back home, like, there is no doubt in my mind that other than like St. Clair, the St. Lawrence, and probably like Erie Buffalo. But I don't know if there's a better smallmouth place in the country right now.
What about Sturgeon Bay? That's a little bit closer to you. That's
they're big, but they're smart. Yeah. And it's like hard. Like these fish are, I mean, they're getting smart, but like I cannot believe the sheer amount of smallmouth that are in that lake. Like it is unbelievable. Like the way the largemouth used to be, but smallmouth. Like it's crazy, man. You're talking schools.
They took advantage of a perfect storm at, like, apparently, right? Like the largemouth went through a severe rapid decline, and the smallmouth are aggressive predators. So they probably just were like, oh, let's make some babies and really blow this lake out, apparently.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
And is Barkley, I mean, the all, same way? Like, or is that all largemouth still?
No, there's smallmouth over there too. There's a lot less fish on Barkley. I think Barkley's still battling the Asian carp situation a little bit more, but like it's still good. Barkley is like the kicker lake, in my opinion. Like that's where like there's really big ones, but they're very spread out. Like, if you look at a map of Barkley, there's not a lot of contours other than, like, one main river channel. Mm-hmm. So, like, they kind of just roam. It's hard to pinpoint them. So, that one's a little bit different. But, yeah, man, the smallmouth took advantage on Kentucky. I mean, all that grass vanished because of the carp. And, I mean, underneath it is just hard bottom rock shell everywhere, and I've never met a smallmouth that doesn't like that.
So, absolutely not. And they were there before, they just didn't flourish. Or
and now there's that lake's like 80-100 miles, whatever it is, and man, that whole, they can live in that whole thing. So it's super cool. But I get to fish for smallmouth a ton now. I'm excited to talk grass fishing for largemouth, because that's actually like what I cut my teeth doing growing up and getting into tournament fishing. A lot of people know me as a smallmouth guy now, and I'm definitely more of a grass largemouth guy. So
isn't that funny how like that kind of translates? Like, yeah, I'm a smallmouth guy, I guide for him, right? I fish for him like 150 days a year, but there's nothing I love more than grass fishing for largemouth. So I'm excited to talk about this, and I guess we could call it like a beginner class with some advanced ideas into it, so we kind of get from beginning to end to help people put a lot more fish in the boat. So you named off before the show the four techniques that you want to talk about. Do you want to start with the jig worm?
Yeah, I mean, we can. Yeah, so we can like, we're talking post spawn to summer largemouth, I guess. And I mean, this goes all throughout the summer up here in Minnesota and any grass lakes from anything I've seen. Where they get like on offshore grass, That's kind of what we're talking. So you probably heard it talked about in Minnesota. It's definitely a Minnesota thing because I've talked with other people about it and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Jigworm is a huge deal in Minnesota. A jigworm was a thing before the Ned rig was ever even a thing. So like once people started throwing Ned rigs, we were like, dude, we've been doing this for, you know, guys were winning tournaments on Minnetonka in the 70s.
Because I have an idea. Is it like the EWG hook on a Ned rig or the slider rig style to where you're like basically, oh, geez.
Yeah, I even rigged it up. So it's all it is we'll see if we can get that. People can see it decently.
It's a mushroom head with a longer hook.
Yeah, it's a mushroom head, longer hook. It's a heavier gauge hook. This is an all-terrain tackle mighty jig. It's like a staple up here. If people want to get into it, I throw a 3/16 a lot or an eighth. That's kind of the two weights you can go by. 3/16 is really just good overall. But so the concept behind a jigworm is kind of like when basket offshore, especially in grass, and you have your milfoil, your coontail, and stuff like that that they're getting into. Those are tall weeds. They stand very tall. These fish tend to suspend in them. They're not necessarily on the bottom, right? They're like 2, 4, 6 feet up, and they're just swimming around, hanging out, having a good time. And it's all basically predicated on how deep the bluegills are and what's going on there. So the concept behind a jigworm is you have the open hook and the mushroom head with a little bit of you have the tread on the back, I guess you would say, to the head, but it grabs weeds because the whole goal of a jigworm is to get it stuck. You want to get it stuck. So you chuck it at the weed edge, you let it fall down, and you like feather it into the weeds. It gets stuck, and you just snap it a couple times, and it maybe falls again. And then really, you reel it in, and you throw it again. Like there's really not much work in it. It's so basic. It's kind of where, you know, you hear people say the term of like cast it out and smoke a dart and you just leave it there and let it soak. That's a jigworm. Like that's what guys did. They just chucked it at a point that they knew there was bass on it. They got it stuck in the weeds and they said, I bet you won't be able to not bite this. And they're right, because they always bite it.
Talk about like rudimentary and just like archaic style of fishing, right? Like, let me just take a worm and slap it on a jig head and have some fun and kind of twill it around. Like, just I just
yeah,
the concept.
No,
is crazy.
Dude, it's but awesome. And like with
what worm are you putting on there?
Huh?
What worm?
So this is just a 4-inch Yamamoto Senko or a Yum Dinger Senko. You can even get the custom poured ones. I don't think, you know, people get really scientific into their Senkos. I don't think it matters on a jigworm. You're just looking for a 4 or 5 inch worm that will get stuck in the weeds. A lot of people like the chartreuse head. And the main reason for that is, and you know this, Andy, you look at the bluegill tails in the north in the summer, they're all chartreuse. So a chartreuse head tends to be very good. I also like to do this. It's a much slower fall and you will catch them on it. And once again, we're back to your old school lures. This is a Berkeley 7-inch power worm, dude.
Is that in motor oil?
This is purple, but I do have motor oil.
Motor oil. All right.
I know. But yeah, it's the same exact thing, man. It's just that 7-inch worm. And I cannot tell you how many big bass, how much money I've won on them. And just, I mean, it's just a great way to fish scattered weeds. Like it really is. It just gets bit. And those fish, when they're in that grass, they're always looking up. So if you throw a presentation that gets stuck above them and you can feel it stuck on the weeds and you just kind of shake the slack a little bit, they'll come grab it. Like they will do it.
And that's like about as old school as it gets. When I think of a 7-inch ribbon tail worm, I think of like an 1/8 ounce tungsten weight unpegged and guys just like flopping it around on weed edges and offshore and just kind of hopping in, be like, well, if they bite, if there's bass, they're going to bite it. And you always see like the old schoolers, they still do it with like the old reels and just throw it out there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's cracking. And we're like, what the hell's that guy doing? Just pitch around old Berkeley ribbon tail worm.
Yeah,
that or a culprit.
Yeah, and the culprits, yeah, those are good ones. But, yeah, man, they still get bit. I mean, it's just a different approach. And, I mean, with the amount of Minnesotans or Midwest guys that have, like, made the elites in the top ranks, now you're seeing I feel like you're seeing more styles from Minnesota starting to translate around the country. One thing I have not understood that has just not traveled to, like, the Northeast to, like, Cayuga and Oneida and Champlain for the largemouth and stuff is a jigworm. Like, I've never understood why it hasn't. I know Fighter catches them on it out there. Yeah. I know Felix does. They talk about it. And I mean, I don't get me wrong, man. I love catching them on a jig or throwing a Texas rig. But the reality is, in a pressured grass fishery, all of a sudden you're going to end up with four spinning rods on your front deck. And that's what we're talking about with this whole finesse fishing grass.
Yeah, I was about to ask, are you throwing with the spinning rod or like a 7-foot medium, like old school jig and worm style blade?
Yeah, I throw it on a spinning rod mainly. So I'll have like 18-pound braid to a 10 or 12-pound FC sniper leader. If it's really thick grass, I might go to 14, like if the coontail's getting real nasty on Tonka at the end of the year. But typically, I mean, you still want them to bite it, and the thicker the line gets and the more you're trying to be finessey, it's not being finessey. Yeah. So I'll typically throw it on, and it's like a medium heavy spinning rod. So like when you look at your 3 or 4 powers even of spinning rods, and you think to yourself, like, why would anyone ever use that spinning rod? It's for a jig worm for the most part. I do know guys who will throw like a quarter. They do make quarter ounces of these. And I know guys that'll throw a quarter ouncer on like a 7-foot medium with 14-pound fluoro. They will do that.
That's up my alley. I love that stuff. Like slightly too light of a bait casting rod, but you can get finessey with it and really wrench on them and flip everything. That's better.
Yeah. So guys definitely do that too. But it's just when you go to the 1/8 and 3/16 ounce heads, it gets pretty hard. And it's also not like you're not making bomb casts with this thing either.
You're throwing it like 30, 50 feet from the boat.
Yeah. You're throwing it like maybe 30 to 50 feet on the side, right on that edge. Like you don't want to get it buried up in there. Cause guess what? You have a spinning reel in your hand. You're going to lose.
Or if a big one grabs it and goes down 80 feet away, it's game over.
Yeah. So you're just trying to get it there. And when they're close and you can jack them, like you got the advantage and you just hang on. But so that's the first one. Jig worm.
What a kicker to start it off, right? The Minnesota special jig worm.
The Minnesota special. We got to talk about it. Now what we'll go to, I think something everyone's familiar with is obviously a drop shot. I guess this is specific. I'm going to talk about this specifically in grass. Cause for me, I do throw a drop shot a ton outside of grass, on rock, around wood, whatever. And I feel like that one, I'm always throwing like a 1/4, 3/8, 1/2 ounce, robo worm, the standard. Everyone's seen it around the country. When I get to grass, so I don't have a full one rigged up, but I got a Zoom trick worm. I like more of the trick worm style, and I actually go wacky on my drop shot.
Yeah, this is funny. We literally are identical.
Yeah.
So but I don't use a trick worm. I use a Strike King, baby finesse worm, which is very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I throw the trick worm or the finesse worm, and that's mainly because they rip off one every like 2 fish, and it's the cheapest pack I can get. And I do it wacky, and I rig it on typically a 3/16 is the weight. I normally don't go lighter because I literally can't even throw it anywhere. And then I normally don't go heavier because, once again, even with this drop shot, when fish are in grass, the biggest thing I want people to take away from this, they're looking up and they're suspended. So you want something that falls slowly. And yes, it will eventually get to the bottom and you can sit there and shake it, but they followed it all the way to the bottom. So and having it wacky, I think it slows it down.
What hook are you using?
I use a VMC Nico 2.
Are you using the new red lines?
I haven't used those ones yet. I've heard they're very good. Yeah, I haven't had any issues with the originals either, though. I mean, yeah. I threw the Gommies too. The Gommies are good. The owner, is that like a
cover shot?
Is it like cover shot? What's the V10? No, is that owner?
I'm not sure. There's too many different hooks.
There's so many hooks. I don't know. The Nico, the VMC Nico hook's always been good. I haven't broke very many of them. I've caught.
I think
a lot
that's the only Nico hook that I actually use when I'm Nico rig fishing, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes. I'm pretty sure is the VMC hook. It's solid.
Yeah, it's a good hook. So I throw that one, and then 10-pound FC Sniper for the most. Once again, 10 to 12 just depends how thick the grass is. But I'm pretty standard with staying to that 3/16 ounce weight in grass, unless it is gassing. But also at that point in time, I'm typically not throwing a drop shot because they're or finesse because they're probably eating. I can throw a crankbait or something at that point in time. So I'm not worrying about it then.
Do you have a favorite color worm or is it just green pumpkin?
Dude, green pumpkin. And that's the funny thing about these finesse grass presentations is like, dude, just pick two color worms. Yeah. They're good. Have one that's good when it's sunny and one good when it's cloudy.
Yeah, I have like the way I do it with finesse worms for largemouth. It's natural green pumpkin and I'll have some dye to, you know, we're talking about the bluegill and dip the tail in it.
Yeah.
Green. So it kind of looks like a bluegill if there's a lot of them swimming around or like a morning dawn, something super bright first thing in the morning or if it's cloudy or sunny, it's. They're not biting one, they bite the other.
I think a really good sleeper color, I'll give everyone a little nugget here in the north, because it gets thrown in Alabama a lot, but a little nugget for everybody on a good color up north, especially when it's cloudy, is red bug or plum. I don't know why it's so good, but they really eat it, and specifically when it's cloudy, because the sun will come out and they won't eat it anymore.
Yeah.
It's a very weird thing, but that's a good one I keep too.
I like red bug on a swimming worm.
Yeah.
Like they do down south. When it gets cloudy, I'll throw a red bug on a swimming worm with non-finesse tactics and crack them on good days. So
Yeah.
Love. Always have red bug for a swimming
worm. Yeah. I think this one's a green pumpkin with red fleck. I don't know, dude. Any variation of green pumpkin. People talk about different fleck colors and everything. I really just reach into my bag and see which one I pull out. And I'm like, that'll do. If I like don't catch them for a while, I'm like, oh, maybe. But
maybe not the
typically,
right one.
It's typically not the color.
So always wacky rigging it because you want to get it hung up in the grass. And do you shake it or do you dead stick it?
So I dead stick it on like a slack line and maybe shake the tip. But like I wait to see like, did it get stuck on a weed or did it get to the bottom?
Yeah.
And like if it's stuck on a weed, that's where I'll shake it. And then like if it's not coming off the weed, you can kind of pop it a little bit and it'll come off. You'll be surprised. I think a lot of people would be really surprised to see how weedless that stuff is if you're keeping your line like semi-taut and like paying attention to it. You can fish through a lot of vegetation and you typically don't hook something until like the bait's near you and then you kind of don't have good leverage. So you're just reeling up and you grab something. But
yeah. All right. What's next? Neko rig?
Yeah, we'll go. So we can go to
Neko.
Yeah, we'll go to a Neko Neko rig. So big thing with this one, I'm going to say, first of all, just this is a plug for a buddy. I don't know if you guys use these things. This is my buddy Dan Fabiano, owns Arsenal Fishing. These are the wacky rig tube pliers. If you throw wacky rig Senkos, Neko rigs, whatever, these things will save you hundreds of dollars. And they're instead of like, I know people use the little O-ring forever. This is just like a band and it works
a lot better.
It works great. It stays on better. And then also, so I visual representation, you can see the weight sticking out. I shove it all the way in there, but then I have my hook up like this so that when you're bringing it through the weeds, it's actually, once again, quite weedless because of that being there. And then when you pop it, you have that band so you're not just ripping through worms all day.
Nothing drives me more insane than when you see people fishing an Neko rig and they have the hook upside down.
Yes. Dude, I do it sometimes. No. Like, I just rig it on, chuck it out, and I reel it in. I look down, and I'm like, ew.
Like I'll look out on the deck of somebody's boat, I'm like, ooh, that's upside down. I'm not gonna tell him. Like, he's gonna get more weeds than bass.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think the biggest thing with a Necco, I go lighter weight, I want to get it somewhat stuck. But that bait, I've noticed more than a jig worm or a drop shot or anything else, a Necco rig finds the bottom pretty good.
Yeah.
Like it really like gets down and through. Yeah, it gets down through. So if they're on the bottom, I feel like a Necco rig catches them really good when they are actually down on the bottom. And I mean, dude, my worm for that one, I've been throwing those Daiwa Yamamoto Necco worms since the day they came out. And I try a bunch of different ones, and I've never found one better, to be honest. They just get bit.
Yeah. That's a good one. I think that's the only one I throw when I do it as well. Or I'll take like a fat robo worm sometimes if I want something real little, but it's usually almost always one of the variations of a Daiwa.
I do have a couple bigger worms that I do Necco rig sometimes, but I'm not talking about those ones. Those ones get big. Yeah, those ones get big fish bites, but they will catch a lot of fish. But there's something about the color and matte finish and just stuff like that they definitely get bit more, and they're way heavier.
Those things sink. You can cast them a mile without the weight in them,
right? Dude, that's the thing, like a Necco rig, I can chuck it a quarter mile. But yeah, they're really good in the grass, and like I said, I think it's mainly when they're on the bottom, because there's days where, I mean, Hayden Anderson is the first guy who taught me how to throw a Necco rig, and I was on Tonka blasting them on a jig worm and a drop shot. Like I was on a tear out there getting top fives, and we went out to a spot and I was like, dude, it's drop shot city. And he like 3-5-1 me that day on an Echo. And I was like, I was throwing it by halfway through the day. And then we ended up figuring out it's because those fish just got lower. And that's, I really feel like it picks it up when the fish are lower.
I love that. And I totally forgot to ask you what your setup was for the drop shot. So I'm assuming it's probably somewhat similar, right? For the two, or is it completely different?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. I like a 7.3 medium heavy for the drop shot. Just try to get them out a little bit more, because especially with that Necco hook, like I can't reef on them like with a jig worm. So I just try to have a little bit more length to get them out. With the Necco, I mean, it's your typical Necco rod.
Your wacky worm rod works pretty well for a simple setup.
Yeah. And actually Hayden just came out with a new rod. It's called a Spin Boss. It's from Voselka Fishing and Customs. That's an awesome Necco rod. It's like a 7.2 or 7.3, but it's got a quick tip. I feel like that's really good for doing that. But you still want it to load, and it's just, dude, whenever you're fishing around grass, I know people are always like, man, I just need to make sure I get them out and wench them out. For the most part, you just want something that's going to peg them good and then hang on, because they'll work their way out. It's just, you got to hang on.
And that's another thing you can say too, is like, I find a lot of people that are grass fishing, especially with finesse setups, they'll try to like pop and drop the rod and pull, just kind of keep it steady and just keep reeling, take the boat to those fish.
Yeah.
You're going to lose a lot less fish.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. You just let them work their way out, and they eventually do. Cause guess what? They don't like being buried in it either. Like they want to get out. So, Necco, I think, is a really big one. And then the last one we'll go to.
A long less forgotten one, right?
Long forgotten. This is sleeper. I've won quite a bit of money on it, so I'm a little hesitant to talk about it. But I think it's a very good one, because this is also good not necessarily in grass, but it's a long forgotten bait. And this is a flick shake. All these worms, all these things going on these days, I just... Dude, there's something. It's a weighted wacky is really what it is. But there's just something about a flick shake, man. Just getting that wacky all the way down and just the way it falls. Dude, there's something about it, and it just really gets bit. This is the VMC one. And I'm going to be honest here. I just haven't really tried many other ones. This one's got a good hook. But if you have any others you'd recommend, I'd use them. It's just I don't go through many of these either.
Yeah, the only ones I ever used to use when I actually flick shake, because I completely forgot about it until like oh, flick shake. I'm like, oh, geez. But I used to use the Jackal setup with the Jackal head,
yeah,
the flick shake head, and the flick shake worm.
Yeah,
I caught a lot of fish on that bait and technique when I first started bass fishing, like 10, was it? Shit. Probably like 12, 13 years ago now is when I caught my first flick shake bass.
Yeah. And this is a technique, like, I mean, a lot of these finesse techniques, dude, people put them down because they're like, oh, this is basic. It's like, dude, this stuff wins a lot of tournaments.
Finesse is relatively basic in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. And it catches a lot of bass. So, like, as people are talking about fish getting smarter, sonar pressure, everything, you know what they can't resist? A worm. those four or five worms that you're presenting differently, they can't resist them. Yeah. They'll bite them.
Like, I think, like, if we're going to go there, like, technical aspect, right? Like, I think, like, hover strolling and mid strolling is way more technical and harder, more hard to figure out how to do it properly for a lot of people than chucking a worm around. Like, there's so much more.
And chucking a worm around gets bit. Like, it's so good. If there's grass around, it's how you can catch bass, man.
It makes it. It's almost like awakening when you go to a lake and all of a sudden you have like that 70-year-old old timer that only fishes that lake, and he comes in and drops the hammer on everyone. You know what he's doing. He's just bombing a worm around in grass 20 feet from the boat and having a time.
Yeah, exactly. He smoked a pack and came in. He's got 20, and you're like, God, again,
ripping my breads.
Flick shake's great. Once again, same setup. I actually will go a bit heavier with this one, just because, like to 12 pound or 14, even just because a lot of times you're like floating this thing down. And when they eat it, they clock it. And, like, you got to jam them pretty fast because it's much more of an aggressive bite than the other stuff from what I've seen. It's kind of weird.
Bass are weird.
Yeah. We love them.
Yeah. And then what's the rod you're using for the flick shake?
It'll be the same rod I use for the jig worm. Perfect. So like a, seven to 7.3 heavier rod that you know you're going to get it stuck in weeds and stuff. That's kind of that bigger one because you're just floating it through and popping it off of stuff. The whole deal with a flick shake is float it down, get it stuck, float it back out, get it stuck.
Love that. Man, I can't wait for grass. Our water's still 45 to 48 degrees on most lakes. And
Our bass season isn't even open, dude.
Yeah, but yeah, that's fair. But you drive to go fishing. I'm stuck guiding.
I mean, that's fair. I would love it. I would love to get out around here. We've had open water for a month and a half. It was record ice outs, and nobody's been able to bass fish. It's just so annoying. But I drove down to Iowa, and then I went down to Kentucky, and now I got the Jude on the Mississippi River to kick her all off. So excited to get down to the Mississippi River. I've been fishing a lot, so it'll be a good time.
You probably feel more in tune with the fish than you have in a couple of years, I'm sure.
Yeah, I feel good. Yeah, I haven't been bouncing around a bunch of different places, which I actually think has helped me more compared to like the years where I go fun fish like 10 or 20 different lakes, because like I went to like a place and stayed there for 4 days and was like, okay, let's figure out what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then I kind of was able to watch that progression. So I have a pretty good idea, I think, of probably what's going on in the river. I think we're going to see some really big St. Jude weights, really big.
I think Cade Loffenberg, is that who's like the one Mississippi River guy? He's been catching big ones, right?
Yeah, Cade weighed in like 23 or 24 somewhere last week. And then I know Wyatt won a tournament on the pool, on the Jude pools, for five with 24 pounds, which is absurd on the Mississippi River. Like, we weigh six, and my goal is to get over 20. And, like, if you know it's a good Jude year, you're like, okay, I'm probably going to need 23 or 22 a day. I'm hearing guys saying you're going to need, like, 24 plus, which the record's 24.93. That's the biggest bag that's ever been weighed. And people are like, it's going to be over that. Like, you're going to need an average of the record bag. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Warm winters with no flood really help.
Yeah. No, dude. They're charged up and they're eating.
Oh, man. Good luck. Have some fun.
Thank you. I will.
And hopefully, hopefully your partner can make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully Panger. I mean, he told me, like he said, he's like, best case scenario is I take 11th in the open.
best case worst case for him, right?
Yeah, take 11, doesn't make the last day, gets to fly up for the Jude. So I guess we'll see, but man, it was nice being back, nice chatting with you. Hopefully I get to join the whole crew sometime soon.
Yeah, we'll figure it out, I'm sure. So it'll be good to have you back on, and go win one of those opens.
Yeah, I'm gonna try now that they're in the backyard. We got a shot, actually.
Oh man, I'm sure you'll do all right. Go catch him up, buddy. It was good seeing you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We'll chat soon. All right, everyone. Well, we appreciate it, as always, for you tuning into this week's episode of the Lure Lab. As always, I forgot to mention it at the beginning of the show. The baits that we talked about today will be listed down in the description. And if you type in Serious 10 at checkout over at Omnia, you can save yourself 10%. Just make sure you click on one of those links. If you're new to the YouTube channel, please hit that subscribe button. We greatly appreciate it. And if you're listening on MP3 in your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and leave us a review. We appreciate that as well. And until next week, we will see you then.